Good morning. Today's Daven Beitza is Tesvav. We are starting with the Mishnah on Yudal Amud Beis. And this morning, Mirz Hashem, we're going to be finishing the first parak of the Masechta, opening up and getting into the second parak. Let's finish up the first parak. Mishach and Kalim bin Tforim bin Shein Tforim. So one's allowed to send clothing on Yantiv. So yesterday we spoke about sending foods on Yantiv. So sending foods to other people on Yantiv is perfectly fine. Either as a gift, could even be transactional, but the point is that as long as there's no Afshar Milsa, as long as it's you're not making a big public to-do about it, so then you'd be allowed to send food to other people on Yantiv. That'd be fine. The Mishnah now, continuing that theme of discussion, says that you're allowed to send clothing as well. So you want to send some gifts of clothing to people, so that would be perfectly fine. And the Mishnah makes a statement, and that is that you could send whatever clothing you want. Doesn't matter if the clothing is tfurim, if it's sewed up, ben shein tfurim, even if it's not stitched up. Now, if the clothing is not stitched up, so one has to wonder, well, then what usage is the clothing? So you don't have to wonder that long. The Gemara is going to ask that very question. Alpha pishesh baim klaim, then the Mishnah goes on to say something amazing. And that is that even if the clothing has klaim, that you're allowed to send as well on Yantiv. Now, obviously, there's an Isser Torah to wear klaim. So if it's a composite of wool linen, the Mishnah says you're allowed to send it on Yantiv. That's really strange. And again, the Gemara is going to pick up on that as well. V'hein letzorech moed. So as long as they are letzorech moed, we're going to explain what that means if we get to the Gemara as well. The simplest reading of the Mishnah is that as long as it has some sort of usage on Yantiv. So you're allowed to send the clothing on Yantiv. And again, it's right now at this point in time, it's really difficult to understand the Mishnah because what current usage is there going to be for klaim on Yantiv itself? Again, stay tuned because the Gemara is going to ask it. It's a pretty obvious question. Avalo sandal mesumar. But here's what you can't do. You can't send the sandal hamesumar. So if you remember the Gemara in Shabbos, Daf Samech, so much discussion regarding the sandal hamesumar. Sandal mesumar, in our modern convention, the best way to describe it would be basically cleats. Okay, so you have a good pair of cleats, and, you know, not with the plastics on the bottom. We're talking about the old-fashioned cleats, you know, with the metal. With the metal spikes on the bottom. And then when you slide into second, so cleats up, or at least that's what the coach used to tell me when I was a kid. So, okay, that's, all right, whatever. Not the best advice it may have been good advice, but certainly could jeopardize somebody else. But anyway, so you're not allowed to wear cleats on Yantiv. And because you're not allowed to wear cleats on Yantiv, you're not allowed to send the, cleats on Yantiv as well. That's Sanda Masumar. The Gemara in Shabbos tells a really sad, horrific story, regarding what happened on a particular Yantiv regarding the Sanda Masumar. I'm not going to go over the story right now. Anyway, the Chachamim where goes there, that one is not allowed to wear cleats on Yantiv. And so therefore, included in the Gzeira, you're not allowed to wear it. You're also not allowed to send it as well. V'lo min nal she'enu tafer. Now, if the shoes are not stitched up, that you can't send as well, because if the shoes are unfinished, so then they have no purpose to it whatsoever. Now, obviously, contrast that to what we learned like two lines earlier in the Mishnah, where the clothing is unstitched, and that's fine. And obviously, once again, the Gemara is going to pick up on that. Rabbi Yehuda Amar af lo min al lavan. Now, Rabbi Yehuda says that you can't send white shoes because white shoes require more processing, and so therefore they're really unfinished, and so the person, the recipient, is going to be tempted to finish them on Yantiv, which he was going to be tzoveh, is going to color them, and that would be a malacha on Yantiv. And so therefore, do not send unfinished shoes. And so the Mishnah tells us that as long as they are, one can benefit from them on Yantiv itself, so then you send them on Yantiv. So as long as they have some sort of point and purpose on Yantiv. Gemara starts off the discussion, Bishlama, Tefurim Chazalam Abush. So I understand the stitched clothing, so that means that, good, so you send it and the recipient can wear it, and that's great. However, Shenet Tefurim Nami Chazal Luxuye. And the Gemara doesn't even bother to ask the question. The Gemara just simply says, and even if it's unstitched. Okay, but still, in other words, it's fabric, and what you could do is you could cover yourself with it. Okay, so the Gemara says, so I see a point to that as well. So, Ela Klaim, Lamai Chazu. But if we're talking about Klaim, you're not allowed to wear Klaim. Now, V'chitem, Chazu, Lamai Machtu, say. So the Gemara says, well, here's what you do. The Torah says that you're not allowed to wear Klaim. Oh, but over here, we're not talking about the wearing of klaim. Well, maybe what we're describing over here is to put the klaim underneath you. And that would be fine. The Gemara says it's not fine. The Torah says not to put it on you. Now, mi ikar hadin, according to the strict interpretation of the Torah, you're allowed to put it underneath you. But to that, the Chachamim said, no, also lasos kenyan, one's not to do that. Because what's going to happen is that while the climb is underneath you, so some loose threads coming off the climb, and you're going to wrap it around, and you're going to get benefit from that. So you're going to get benefit from just one little thread. So Rashi says maybe, right? Look at Rashi. Shema tichur cholonima v'yeshnimim gedolim v'gasim. So Rashi says, well, look, some of the threads are really thick, and so kagon shel galuf karim shekorin kot. Okay. So when the Gemara over here describes Nima, so Rashi interprets it to mean that it could be a really thick thread. And that's how you're violating Shanes, by taking that really, really thick thread. Inami, look at the next part of Rashi. Really interesting. In other words, again, the issue that Rashi is trying to address is Gzera de Rabbanan. Don't sit on climb, because even though Meikar Adin, that's okay, but you may wrap some thread around your body, and that's a problem. And so why is that a problem? So the first pshat of Rashi, which we just covered, is that it's a thick thread and it's going to provide some warmth. This inami, this alternative explanation of Rashi, really interesting. Nima ba'ama, we're talking about just any loose thread. And kevin de'ikar ha'beged, mehano u'mechamama milamata, havile ha'levisha de'ispehana. So basically what Rashi is saying over here is that we could split up the levisha and the hana. Well, look, right now, is there hana? Sure. In other words, it's underneath me. It's softening my sitting. And so, good. So that's the hana. I, the levisha. Oh, when a thread now comes and I wrap myself in that thread, so now it's going to be levisha as well. So really a fantastic pshat within Rashi, an amazing pshat. And that, in order to violate the isser of shatnes, so you do need levisha, you do need hana, but you don't need the two of them to be coming from the same source. They could be coming from two different locations, two different sources, and that still would be a violation. That's an amazing pshat. But again, Rashi is trying to explain what exactly the Gzera D'Rabbanan is. What is it predicated on? So the Gemara says, okay, so we're trying to figure out now what exactly is, what usage is there climb on Yantiv? Again, the Mishnah says you're allowed to send climb on Yantiv, and what usage is there, and we still haven't figured it out. So the Gemara says, well, maybe you're sitting on the climb, but not directly on the climb. In other words, there's another cushion, all on top of the climb. So the climb right now is not physically touching you. Now, v'hamar Rabbi Shimon ben Pazi, amar Rabbi Shimon ben Levi, amar Rabbi Yossi ben Shaul, amar Rabbi Mishum, kala kadisha di Yerushalayim, afilu esar matzah zu al gav zu, the climb tachteim asur lishan aleihem, mishum shenem lo yala alecha. So, including the Gzera D'Rabbanan, is that even though it is not directly underneath you, as long as it's under you, even if it's under 10 mattresses, nevertheless, it's also including the Gzera as well. So once again, Hadra Kosher L'Duchta, we're back to square one. So what point, what usage would there be in terms of sending Klayim on Yantiv? The Mishnah says you're allowed to, and we're still struggling to understand why that should be. So Ella Bivilon. So the Gemara says, so maybe what the reason why you're sending it is because you're not going to wear it, you're not going to sit on it, but rather what you're going to do is you're going to set it up as a curtain. So the Gemara says, really? Now, it can't be because we know a rule taught to us by Ula, and that is that a vilon is mekabel tuma. Now, in order for something to be mekabel tuma, so it has to be keli. So what exactly, why would the vilon be mekabel tuma? Mimnei shamash mischamim kenegdo. Because what's going to happen is that if it's really cold and the shamash needs to get a little bit of extra warmth, so what he's going to do is he's basically going to wrap himself up in the drapes. I know the drapes are hanging right now, but you know, there's a little bit of extra material, and he'll wrap himself up, and so therefore he'll use it to provide for himself warmth. So if that's true, so the vilon now would also be a problem of shatnes, meaning even though I hang it up vertically, but since people use it for warmth, so therefore that should also fall under the category of an issur d'rabbanan, may even be an issur d'oraisa. So the point, of course, is that you can't send that as well in the form of kalayim. So we're still struggling. We're on the very top of Tezvav Amin Aleph, still trying to say a pshat now in the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that you're allowed to send kalayim on Yantiv, And what usage could there be from kalayim? So ela b'kashrim. So the Gemara finally concludes that what we're talking about over here is that it's kalayim, but it's not a soft material. It's really hard. Rashi over here describes begadim kashrim she'ein mitzchamim, so mutar leishev alehem. So if it is a hard article of clothing, a hard article of fabric, and there's no warmth that derived from it, so therefore what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to sit on top of it. So if you have, this is not a halachic statement, it is a halachic statement, but I'm not paskening. But if you have a sofa, fabric for sofa that's made up of climate, it's a really hard material, so it could be, again, you'll ask your local Rav, but it could be that would be fine. You're allowed to sit on that. Right? But that's exactly what the Gemara says. Ela b'kashin. V'chihadam ervuna b'reidur av Yeshua ha'namta gamda denar sharya. And the Gemara says, and this fits in right with the statement of Rav Huna. Because Rav Huna says that if you have namta gamda, some sort of hard material coming from the town of Narasha Sharya would be permitted. So again, this idea that once it's a hard material, it's not going to be mischamim. So one, in fact, is allowed to sit down on those items. Yeah. Okay. The felt you and I are familiar with, you're right. So Rashi must have been describing something that was around in his day. Now, you know, I'm sure the words have the same basic meaning, but I have a feeling that his felt is a little bit different than ours. Amra Papa, Ar Dalin Ein Be Mishum Kalayim. So Ar Dalin. Okay, so what are we talking about? So Rashi basically says insults. Look at Rashi. Ar Dalin Reita B'Chuvas HaGaonim. So Rashi over here has to go to the Gaonim, the works of the Gaonim, and in order to get a shot of what this is, Shirigil Malav Shem Tachas Men Aleim, they put it under their shoes. V'Tolan Aleim Or Shel Tayashim Meubadim Tachas Karkei Osan. Okay, some I call it insults. Rashi seems to indicate that he went even on the bottom of the shoes. Whatever the case is, V'Kineged Aikiv Shel Rega Yeshosin Shel Tzemer V'Korno Sonamte. Okay, whatever the case is, the point is that it's some sort of hard insole that goes in. A composite of wool and linen. So, Amra Papa Ardala Eimem Mishim Kalayim. So, it's no issue whatsoever. So, again, it's hard. You're not getting any warmth out of it. And so, therefore, it'd be fine. Amra Rava Hanitzriya Dipshita Eimem Mishim Kalayim Dibazrani Yeshmem Mishim Kalayim. Okay, now let's say you have fabric pouches. Pouches that are made up of kalayim, wool and linen. And if it's used for storing coins, and on top of that, Rashi adds over here, you put these items on your lap, right? Shetzorim b'maus mutar l'sitan b'cheko, says Rashi. So now what you could do is you could take these fabric purses that are holding coins, and you could put them in your lap. It's made up of klayim, and you're warming yourself up. So what Rava's point is that you're not warming yourself up. Since the contents of this bag is going to be coins, so coins obviously a hard metal, so there's no warmth, and therefore there would be no violation of kalayim. On the other hand, says Rava, if the pouch is used to store seeds, well, seeds are a little bit softer, obviously are an organic material, and so therefore that would in fact provide warmth, and that would be prohibited. In other words, you can't use a kalayim pouch to hold seeds and then put that pouch on your lap because that's going to warm you up, and that'll be a violation of kalayim. Rav Ashi Amar, Echad Zev Echad Zein Be'em Mishum Kalayim L'Fishein Derechimam Bekach. And Rav Ashi says, it doesn't matter what the pouch is holding, whether it's holding coins, whether it's holding seeds. He feels that Ein Ba'chimum. You're not warming yourself up with it. And so therefore, there would not be a violation of Kalayim. Avalo Sandal Mesumar continues the Gemara going through our Mishnah. And we're at the point of discussing the cleats. Sandal HaMesumar Maitam Alam Mishum Maiser Shahaya. So over here, the Gemara also, like I did, made quick reference of the Gemara and Shabbos. In other words, there was a terrible incident, tragic incident that occurred, that people were killing each other with the cleats that they were wearing. It was a yontif. There was a lot of congregation occurring on that day. And so as a result of that, so the Chachamim said on yontif. In other words, the Gemara and Shabbos says the incident happened on yontif when people congregated. So anytime that you have a mass number of people, so basically what the Chachamim did is they created legislation in order to ensure the safety of people. And part of that legislation is that on Yantav, you're not allowed to wear cleats. So, Shayam, Rabbi Sandam, Mesumar, Asala, Nalo, Motola, Tautalo. So, and Abai says that you're not allowed to wear the cleats on Yantav. However, they're not Muksa. Asala, Mesumar, Isa, Shayam, meaning the Gzera, the Rabbanan tells us that you're not allowed to wear it. Umotola, Tautalo, Meditani, Mishachin. Now, the Abaye says, now, in terms of muksa, it's not muksa. Now, it's interesting, by the way, why isn't it muksa? Well, Abaye's not going to really say why. Abaye's just simply going to read our Mishnah, make a deek in our Mishnah, and Abaye's going to arrive at the conclusion that, look, if you carefully and critically read our Mishnah, you'll see that it's not muksa. Why isn't it muksa? So it's a great question, and I don't have a great answer. Meaning, if you're not allowed to wear it, the Chachamim Asad wearing it, so ostensibly, what usage does it have? What purpose does it have? So, and the idea that it's not muksa, okay, it definitely needs more clarification. Okay, all right, fine. Because look, our Mishnah says you're not allowed to send it. So if the item is muksa, so then the Mishnah wouldn't have to make the point of you're not allowed to send it. Meaning, ostensibly, if something is muksa, it's a davar pasha that you're not allowed to send. So by virtue of the fact that the Mishnah bans, prohibits the sending of the sandal hamasumar, it must mean that picking up and moving around in of itself is fine. And the only thing that the Chachamim prohibit is sending it on yontif and obviously, and wearing them. Okay, but a deek in the Mishnah would indicate that it is not, in fact, muksa. V'lomino sh'einu tzalfer pshita. Now, if the shoes are not stitched together, so the Mishnah says that you're not allowed to send on yontif because it has no usage on yontif. Now, the Gemara is bothered because it seems to be an obvious statement. Now, I would just simply counter and say, I don't understand. In the Mishnah, we talked about clothing that was unstitched, and that you're allowed to send, and then the Mishnah turns around and says, oh, but not shoes. So, it's just interesting that the Gemara thinks it's such an obvious point, where meanwhile, in the Mishnah itself, so unstitched clothing you can send, I don't know, maybe you would have thought the same thing is true regarding unstitched shoes. Okay, but meanwhile, the Gemara thinks, no, you can't even entertain such a thought. So the Gemara says, okay, so if I'm not entertaining such a thought, so then why would the Mishnah say that you can't send unstitched shoes? So the Gemara says, yeah, they're not stitched, but they went through some processing. So the Gemara over here describes some pegs going through the shoes. I don't know. It's being loosely held together by some fasteners, but it's not fully stitched together. Okay, so it's in this tweener stage. So now I could have entertained a havamina that maybe that would be okay. Kamash malan that's not okay. In other words, you can't send it. Rabbi Yehuda Amar Aflamina Lavan. Tanya Rabbi Yehuda Matir B'Shachor V'Asir B'Lavan. Rabbi Yehuda says to send black shoes meaning that they already were polished and colored, so that's fine. But white shoes that you're not allowed to send. Mimnei Shetzarech Bitza Sagir, because what you have to do is you're going to have to paint to black. Right, the Gemara over here is describing some sort of chalk, some sort of color dye that's used to color the shoes. Rabbi Yossi Oser B'Shachor Mimei Shetzarech Litzachzecho. Now, Rabbi Yossi goes one step further. Even if they're black shoes, you are not allowed to send them on Yantiv because they're not fully finished yet. In other words, they still need some buffing, some polishing, and so you're not allowed to send it because the recipient is going to look at the shoes and be tempted to put to polish it on Yantiv.
Excuse me, Rabbi.
I'm
sorry. Yeah. The shoe that's not stitched, why is not muksa?
Yeah,
if you can wear it, it should also be
muksa. You're right. Anachinami. I don't, yeah.
Did the question?
No. The Gemara does not. And I don't know. I'd be guessing, but I don't know. So, Rabbi Yossi, Yossi B'Shachar, and Mishnah Tzarech Letzachzecho. Okay, so, as far as black shoes are concerned, can they be sent? So, what we have over here is a machlokas. But the Gemara says it's not a machlokas. V'lo pligi. Marki Asrei, Basri Damar, Bisrol Atachas, Basri Damar, Bisrol El. So the Gemara says, look, some shoes, after you color them, they need further polishing, and some shoes do not. It depends which side of the leather is facing inward, which side is facing outward. And you can see Rashi over here. I'm not going to go through the details. But Rashi over here explains that if the leather is facing a particular way, even after they're black and they still need further polishing. If the leather is facing the other direction, so they only need blacking and they don't need polishing. Okay, and you can see Rashi for details. Anyway, but the Gemara says there's no machlokas on it. It basically is just a simple question of would it need any extra work in finishing, and if it does, you can't send it on Yantiv. Zaklal kol shnei osam b'yamto of Rav Sheshes Sharlu l'Rabban l'shduri tefillin b'yumatava. Okay, so the Gemara says now a significant heter by Rav Sheshes, and that is that you're allowed to send tefillin on Yantiv. You're allowed to send tefillin on Yontif. Now, everyone over here, we're all thinking the same thing. How could that possibly be? Right? You're not allowed to wear tefillin. Not on Shabbos, not on Yontif. Right? The Gemara says that Shabbos is an os. Presumably Yontif also is an os. And so therefore tefillin is an os. And I don't need the os of tefillin on Shabbos where I already have an os. Okay? And so there, ostensibly, it is also to wear tefillin on Shabbos and on Yontif. Now, I'm going to return back to that point momentarily. I will show you a Rashi in just a moment. But meanwhile, ostensibly, it's Aser. And so how could the Mishnah, not the Mishnah, sorry. How could Rav Sheshet possibly suggest that you're allowed to send tefillin on Yontif? It's nearly impossible to understand. Amalei Abaye, so we're not asking the question for the first time. Abaye asked this question approximately 1,700 years ago. So Amalei Abaye, v'anan tzanan kol shenei osim bo b'yomtov mishachno so. So Abai turns to Rav Sheshet and says, how? How could that be? Go back to our Mishnah. Read the Mishnah. The Mishnah says that the only thing I'm allowed to send on Yontif are only those things which we can enjoy and benefit on Yontif itself. Hachi Kamar. So the Gemara, to which the Gemara says, let me explain, let me give you a good pshat. And that is Kol Sheneos Ba'Bachom Shachanos B'Yontif. When the Mishnah says that you can get benefit, it doesn't mean on Yontif. It means that you can get benefit, period, comma. Meaning it's a finished product. So if it's a finished product, so then now you're allowed to send it. Even though the actual usage of the item is not going to be on Yontif itself, but rather it's going to be after Yontif. So that you're allowed to send. Now, I can show you Rashi. The Rashi writes over here, Meshachna so b'yomtov, so dehai b'yomtov, diktani masisan lav, ane osan, dilaka mekai. So, Ella, Amishach in the Basrei. So in terms of the Hana'a, so Rashi says it's not modifying Yontif, but rather it's modifying the word, the Mishaleach. Meaning as long as you could benefit it. In other words, and it's not on Yontif. Right, in English we call that, you know, a dangling modifier. Meaning it's not clear when the Mishnah says the words, and you're going to benefit from it, what, on Yontif? That's a simple reading of the Mishnah. The Gemara says, no, that's not the correct reading. Correct reading is that the recipient can benefit from it, doesn't have to be on Yontif. You could send it on Yontif, even though the benefit's coming after Yontif. Now, ulasui tefillin asa. Now, Rashi continues, Rashi writes over here, and it's coming to include tefillin, di'inami manachlu b'yontov, like a isura. Because look, when it comes to tefillin, so do we put tefillin on Yontif? No. No need to put tefillin on Yontif. And what if you do put tefillin on Yontif? So Rashi describes over here that there's no isur. So that's something which is rather remarkable. It's an amazing comment by Rashi, where Rashi says that there's no isser to put tefillin on in Yontif. Meaning, certainly it's not appropriate, it's not the right time to put tefillin on, but you're not violating an isser to do so. Okay? How does Rashi arrive at that conclusion? It's really unclear. But anyway, but I understand what's bothering Rashi. Meaning that if the tefillin mamish is also to put on Yontif, so granted it's a finished product, and granted you can put it on after Yontif, But if it's something that you are prohibited from putting on Yontif, so then wouldn't it be Muksa? So that's probably what bothers Rashi, and that probably led Rashi to the conclusion, it's not Muksa, and you are, you're not allowed to put tefillin on Yontif, but if you do so, you're not in doing so violating an Isser. Okay? That's Rashi. Rashi is open for a lot of debate and controversy. Other Rishonim disagree with Rashi. But anyway, Rashi and today's daf. Amar Rabbi, we're back to the Gemara. We're 2/3 of the way down on Tezvav and Aleph. Tefillin Hov Asaliyadei Nema B'Milsa. You know what? We just brought up tefillin. So you know what? Allow me, please. Allow me to say a chiddush regarding tefillin. And that is, Hayabab B'Derech V'Tefillin B'Rosho V'Shak Alav Chama. So let's say you're walking home and you're wearing the tefillin. Again, a reminder, right? This is a frequent reminder here in the daf. They used to wear the tefillin all day. So now, as we're getting close to the end of the day, so the tefillin's still on. So now what do you do? So the nighttime is not the right time to wear tefillin. So, but meanwhile, you got caught in traveling. So, now it turns out that as the sun sets and now at nighttime and you're still wearing your tefillin. So what you should do, you should put your hand over your tefillin. Put your hand on top of your tefillin and walk home in that manner.
Why did you say
Belosh
only? What happened to the hand?
Yeah. I hear you. I think it's a good question. Okay. Maybe the clothing is already covering it.
No,
okay. Yeah. What's it called? What the doctor's saying? What the doctor's suggesting? In other words, the tefillin should be yad, so it's already being covered. The tefillin should be rosh is exposed. In fact, the Gemara Bracha says that the tefillin should be rosh needs to be exposed. People need to see the tefillin should be rosh. Okay. Anyway, so so you cover it. And the point of covering it, so Rashi says, v'chacham imitir lo lachti, sam le'ir, derech malbush, dihi, no, not that Rashi, sorry. So presumably, the point of covering it is, basically just to be a little bit more modest, over the fact that you're wearing it at a time where it's not appropriate to wear it. Hayah yosheh beveis ha-medrash, shetzvon berosh, v'kidish alem ha-yom. So now let's say it's Friday and you're in the base medrash and you really got involved in your learning. Okay, good. So it's a great scene. Friday afternoon, late Friday afternoon, you're in the base medrash, you're wearing tefillin, you're learning. Oh, perfect. And now, you realize, okay, now it's time to go home. And meanwhile, Shabbos is coming. And again, on Shabbos, Shabbos is not appropriate time to wear tefillin. Okay, again, is it also to wear tefillin on Shabbos? We can go back to that Rashi that we just saw moments earlier. So, but regardless, it's not appropriate to wear tefillin on Shabbos. So what do you do? So, okay, so again, same maneuver, and that is that you put your hand on your tefillin, right, covering your tefillin, and you run home, and then you take off your tefillin. Okay. So the Gemara now is bothered because we're going to learn a brisa, and in this brisa, slight discrepancy in terms of what the proper procedure is. In the brisa, when you have your tefillin and it's now and now Friday night, sunset, nighttime, so Shabbos has begun. So what do? So you go into the city and bais ha-samach l'choma. First house by the wall of the city, that's where you take off your tefillin. So here also, first secure house that you get to, that's where you take off your tefillin. So, do you go home with your tefillin, or do you take it off in your first secure location? And the answer, as you probably guessed already, is that, yeah, both statements are true. So lo kasha, had mintura, had lo mintura. So the Gemara says, yeah, so it's just a question of what's the secure location? Meaning, if the first house as you enter into the city, if the first house that you encounter is in fact a secure location, so take your tefillin off there. And if the first house over there is not a secure location, and the really only secure location is your home, so take your tefillin off when you get home. It's pretty straightforward. So the Gemara says, if we're worried about the security of tefillin, and we're worried about the tefillin being compromised, somebody taking the tefillin, stealing the tefillin, whatever the case is, if you're worrying about the tefillin being compromised, so then, why is the Braisa painting a situation where, and you're wearing your tefillin on a Friday afternoon? So say the halacha with even a bigger chiddush, which is, even if you weren't wearing the tefillin, if you encounter tefillin on Shabbos, and it's in a compromised position, so the halacha is very clear, it's a Mishnah Erevin. We're about to review the Mishnah in just a second. And that is put the tefillin on. And now that you're wearing them, and now you'll go and take them to a secure location. So why over here are we describing, and you were wearing your tefillin, even if you weren't wearing your tefillin. Hatanam, we looked in the Mishnah. Amotzi tefillin machnisin zug zug. So you encounter tefillin, you discover tefillin, and they're in a compromised position. They're out there as subject to not only the elements, but maybe even being stolen. So what you do is you put the tefillin on and you bring them to a secure location. So why over here are we only describing, and you were wearing your tefillin? So the Gemara says, Lokasha ha dimintur amachmas ganave, o machmas kave, ha dimintur amachmas kave, v'lo mintur amachmas ganave. So the Gemara says, here's how we're going to be miyash of everything. So, if you are worried about thieves, so and you're worried about dogs, meaning that the tefillin right now are in a position where they can either be either compromised by dogs or just simply taken by thieves. And obviously, you know, the kedusha of the tefillin being violated by the thieves. So under those circumstances, so then even if you're not wearing them, so what you'll do is that you will put them on and bring them to a secure location. If, however, on the other hand, If you're worried about both thieves and dogs, so then So I'm sorry. So that's a buy situation. That's a buy scenario in which you could do. What you're supposed to do is what's it called? While you're wearing them, bring them home. The Brisa is talking about where thieves may come along and take it. So Mao Detema Rav Listim Yisrael Nenevalom Zazabahu. So the Gemara has a really curious Havamina. The Gemara says, you know, one could have said that if the only concern, the only issue are thieves, so maybe at that point in time, there's no other concern, a question of security as it relates to the tefillin. So maybe I would have thought, don't put the tefillin on. Why not put the tefillin on? Because even if there is a thief, and even if the thief takes it, but the thief is going to be a Jewish thief, and he's not going to compromise the kedusha of the tefillin. Admittedly, that's a really strange havamina. Okay, but that was the havamina. So Kamash Malan, the Chiddush is no. That's not a good enough argument to make. And so therefore, in all situations, in all scenarios, so you're going to be as long as there are a potential threat of ganavim. So then you're going to even put the tefillin on in order to bring it to a secure location. Hadron al Chmitza, and that brings us to a conclusion of the first parak of the Masechta. Okay, so in the first parak of Beitza, as a quick summary now of basically the entire first parak, so various machloks in between Beit Shammai and Beit Hillel as it relates to Simchas Yontif, what you can and cannot do on Yontif in terms of the full enjoyment of Yontif. And so a host of Mishnayos that go through what Beit Shammai allows and what Beit Hillel allows in 9 out of 10 times, right? That's a made-up stat, but that's basically it. The 9 out of 10 times, Beis Hillel comes out to be a meiko when it comes to Simchas Yontif. Beis Shammai comes out to be a machmir on all the issues that we discussed in the first parak, with notable exception to the first Mishnah. Right, the first Mishnah of the Masechta, so Beis Hillel there becomes a machmir, Beis Shammai is a meiko, but that's it. Okay, and with that, we now begin the second parak of the Masechta, and we start now with the topic of Erev Tavshilin. Erev Tavshilin, a super enjoyable topic to discuss in the Gemara. And it begins right here at the beginning of the second parak of Beitza. So just as a quick introduction to Erev Tavshilin, and then we start with the Gemara. So Erev Tavshilin is a Takana D'Rabbanan, a rabbinic institution. What it allows to do is to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. So that means to say that you can't cook from Yontif to Shabbos, and then with Erev Tavshilin, you're allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. Now mechanically, how does that work? So stay tuned. In a moment, I'm going to explain. But the way to set up Erev Tavshilin is very simple. In other words, prior to Yontif, what you do is you cook foods. In a moment, we're going to learn the Mishnah together. Two cook foods, and those two cook foods now are going to be your Erev Tavshilin. And now with that Erev Tavshilin, so you now have the permission to go ahead and not only cook on Yontif for Yontif, but you now can go ahead and cook from Yontif to Shabbos. Obviously, we're talking about where Yontif comes out on a Friday, or the 2 days of Yontif come out to be on a Thursday and a Friday. So this now allows you to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. So that is the institution of Erev Tavshilin. So just by way of introduction, so what we really have to know is the Gemara Pesachim, in order to appreciate and entertain, like, what is this institution of Erev Tavshilin? Erev Tavshilin is rabbinic, as we pointed out. It's not a mitzvah of the Torah. And yet, as it relates to Erev Tavshilin, so the Gemara wants to know, in Pesachim, Daf Mem Vav, so mechanically, how does it work? Meaning it's a rabbinic institution. That's lovely. So if the Torah, in fact, prohibits you cooking from Yontif to Shabbos, because remember, the heter vochel nefesh on Yontif allows you to cook on Yontif for Yontif. But to cook from Yontif to another day, so you're not allowed to do that. You can't cook from Yontif to Yom Chol. In fact, if you cook from Yontif to Yom Chol, so you're violating the Torah. The Torah does give license to cook from Yontif for that day, for Yontif. But once you're not cooking for Yontif, you're cooking for a Yom Chol the day after Yontif, so now you don't have a heter vochel nefesh, and now you're just simply violating Yontif. And you're violating the Torah. So if, in fact, we're talking about an Issa Torah to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, which is the next day, so then what's Erev Tavshilin helping you? Erev Tavshilin is a rabbinic institution. That's lovely. A rabbinic institution can go ahead and just simply allow an Issa in a Torah? That's the Gemara Pesachim asks the question. That's impossible to understand. So the Gemara over there brings down a fundamental debate between the Amoraim, exactly what is the... What's happening over there? So the Gemara has two positions, Rabbah, Rav Chisda. So basically it goes like this. There are two approaches in terms of how to understand the Isser from cooking from Yontif to Shabbos and what Erev Tavshilin is trying to accomplish. Well, we're going to be focusing here in the second parak in terms of what Erev Tavshilin is trying to accomplish. So in terms of what the Erev Tavshilin is looking to do, that's our discussion. But in terms of the mechanics, so the Gemara Pesachim says one of two things. One is that you're not allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, just like you're not allowed to cook from Yontif to a weekday. Shabbos is the next day. You can't cook. Min HaTorah. So then what, so how can Erev Tavshilin allow an Issa Daraisa? So the answer is that there is a principle called Hoel. The principle of Hoel tells me that, look, I know I'm cooking for Shabbos, but what if guests come? So if I have guests coming on Yontif, I have this extra food. So you know what I'm going to do with that extra food? I'm going to feed it to my guests. Now, I know, by the way, that what you can argue is, if I really need the food for Shabbos, I'm not sure if I'm ready to give it to my guests. Okay, but nevertheless, the idea behind Hoel is that, no, in other words, people are generous in nature, and once guests are coming, so it's possible that this food, even though I'm cooking it for Shabbos, it's possible it can be used for Yontif. That now removes the Issa Daraisa, and then the Erev Tavshilin on top of that is a rabbinic mechanism. It's a rabbinic legislation to go ahead and cook from Yontif to Shabbos. That's one way to say it. Another way to say it, says the Gemara in Pesachim, is that, look, you're not allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, you're not allowed to cook from Yontif to Chol. Okay, but that's a weekday. But you are allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. Now, Rashi over there in the Gemara in Pesachim says, it's really interesting, Rashi over there says that it's predicated on the fact that Yontif and Shabbos, when they're back to back, so it's Kedusha Achas, it's really one long day of sanctity. And so therefore, it's not like you're cooking from Yontif to another day. In other words, when you have Yontif and Shabbos and they're contiguous, so then it's considered Kedusha Achas, and it's like you're cooking for that Yontif. Okay. And then once you say that, then what's the Erev Tavshilin? So again, a rabbinic institution and the reasons which we're going to explain in this parak over here. So just as a basic introduction to Erev Tavshilin, really you have to know the Gemara Pesachim and Vav, and we just went over it outside. And that is that the rabbinic institution, Erev Tavshilin, cannot bypass an Issa Daraisa. So you're going to say that there is no Issa Daraisa for one of two reasons, either because of Hoel or because Yontif, you're allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, even though you're not allowed to cook from Yontif to a weekday. Good. That is all a summary of the Gemara Pesachim. And now we turn. That's absolutely correct.
Okay, then when you cook for Shabbos, what you must do the second day or must you?
Oh, so it's confusing. It's for sure confusing. Meaning the two days of Yontif are not considered Kedusha Achas.
Right.
Right, we already established that earlier in our parak.
When do you cook for Shabbos?
Huh?
When do you cook for Shabbos? On the second day Yontif or the first day?
Oh, so no, presumably second day of Yontif. Second day of Yontif, right? Okay. If we're talking about a 2 day Yontif, if it's Thursday, Friday. Okay. Yomtiv Shechal Yos Erev Shabbos, so when Yontif comes on Erev Shabbos, first mission now here in the second parak of Beitza, so Lo Yivash Shabbat Chilam Yomtiv the Shabbos. So, in the absence of an Erev Tavshilin, you're not allowed to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. What you're allowed to cook is only for Yontif. Vim hosir hosir l'Shabbos. Now, if there happens to be leftovers, that's fine, right? Leftovers are great. And I'm saying that both personally, and I'm saying that also halachically. Meaning, so if you have leftovers, in other words, you didn't make an Erev Tavshilin, you cooked extra food on Yontif, and if there are leftovers, that's fine. Now, v'osa tavshom Erev Yontif. Now, the Mishnah over here says, but you know what? There's a way where one could lichatchila cook from Yontif to Shabbos. How to do that? So osa tavshom Erev Yontif. So what you're going to do in Erev Yontif is you start cooking for Shabbos. So osa tavshom Erev Yontif v'samech alav l'Shabbos. And now you start cooking it for Shabbos, and now we're going to use the terminology of Erev Tavshilin. So it's so interesting. The Mishnah itself doesn't use that exact terminology, but that's what we're describing over here. And now in doing so, now that gives legitimacy lichatchila to cook from Yontif to Shabbos. So Beishami Armim Shein Tavshilin, Beisila Armim Tavshil Echad. So what exactly is the composite of the Erev Tavshilin machlokas between Beishami and Beisila? So here, once again, we're back to another machlokas here in this Masechta. A lot of them here in Beitza. Another machlokas between Beit Shammai and Beit Zil. Beit Shammai says two cooked foods. Beit Zil says one cooked food. V'shavim bedaga Beit Zil shalav shehin shnei tavshilin. Now, despite the fact that Beit Zil only requires one cooked food, nevertheless, he will say that if you have fish with an egg on top of it, so that's considered two cooked foods. Achlo oshava lo yivasho ala b'tchila. Now, if somebody ate the Erev Tavshilin prior to you to your cooking from Yontif to Shabbos, or if you lost the Erev Tavshilin, so that's it. In other words, it's gone. And so now you can't rely on the Erev Tavshilin anymore. Now, if there's any of the Erev Tavshilin left over, so then you can be Samech. Now, when the Mishnah says any amount of the Erev Tavshilin, so if I recall correctly, hopefully I do, so we're talking about a Kazayis. Okay. Now, Menahan Emili, the Gemara says, now, from where do I know about this idea of Erev Tavshilin? That's a great way to open up the discussion about a rabbinic institution. Menahan Emili, so that, generally speaking, is a question in terms of how do I know about a halacha min haTorah. Erev Tavshilin is not a halacha min haTorah, it's a rabbinic institution. Rashi, right away in the Gemara, picks that up. Menahan Emili, lav davka mikrai, yalef, Erev Tavshilin, derabanan. So Rashi immediately jumps on this, and Rashi says, I know, it's a din derabanan. So over here we're looking at smachta, right? This is a common, really, really common exercise of the Gemara in which the Chachamim take a rabbinic institution and they attach it to a pasuk. This is what's called an smachta. So menani amila amar shmol damar kroz zechoros yom shabbos zechashos zechreo me'achar shabala ashkicho. Now make sure to remember Shabbos. Now in situations where you're most apt to forget about Shabbos, so at that point in time, make sure to remind yourself of Shabbos. So, when are you most apt to forget about Shabbos? So, I'll give you a scenario. So, a scenario would be where the day before Shabbos is Yontif. Okay, so now, in all of our excitement regarding Yontif. So, for Yontif, we are not only eating, but we're eating, we're cooking, we're living it up on Yontif. So now, it's very possible that, look, with all that excitement on Yontif, you're going to forget about Shabbos. So put in a reminder. So now put in the reminder. So the Chachamim now, so they got tipped off. Oh, we got to put in a reminder. Erev Tavshilin. Erev Tavshilin is there now to remind us prior to Yontif that look, we're going to have an exciting day in Yontif. It's going to be amazing. But there's Shabbos afterwards as well, and that's what the Erev Tavshilin is there to do. So my time, Amar Rava Kadesh Shivor, Mani Yafel Shabbos and Mani Yafel Yomtov. So Rava gives a different reason, and that is that. Make sure that we still have something for Shabbos. Meaning that obviously we have 2 days now of enjoyment back to back. And what you're going to do is that you're going to, you may not plan properly. So therefore the Erev Tavshilin is just a simple way of making sure that you have for Shabbos. Now it's not exactly the same as the first explanation, similar, but it's not exactly the same. And in fact, the Gemara now is going to point out a nafka mina between these two. Rava was explaining that that basically it's there to force you to remember. Rav Ashi Amar Kadesh Yomru Ein Ofin Miyamtov LaShabbos Kavachomer Miyamtov LaChol. So the Erev Tavshilin is there to remind you that you can't cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, meaning until you make Erev Tavshilin, and now it's basically a tap on the shoulder saying, hey, if I can't cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos without Erev Tavshilin, oh, you know what? I for sure can't cook from Yom Tov to Chol. Okay. It's funny, by the way, because I can easily imagine what this backfiring, meaning if I can't cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos until I make Erev Tavshilin, so you know what? I'll cook from Yom Tov to Chol if I make an Erev Tavshilin. Anyway, but the Gemara's assumption is not that if you set up an Erev Tavshilin in order to be able to cook from Yontif to Shabbos, so it's there to remind you, oh, okay, fine, but I can't cook from Yontif to Chol. Tanan osa tavshil me'erev yomtov, v'samech alav v'shabbos bisham, l'rav ashadamar, k'deish yomar ein ofen v'yomtov v'shabbos, hainu d'me'erev yomtov in b'yomtov lo. Now, if the whole point is there to serve as a reminder, so good, so I need to set it up before Yontif, to remind me that I'm not allowed to cook from Yontif to Chol. And the only reason why I'm cooking from Yontif to Shabbos is because of Erev Tavshilin. But El Rava, my Irya Meir of Yontif, I feel Yomtov. But according to Rava, if the whole point of the Erev Tavshilin is reminder, hey, remember, I know you're loving Yontif right now, but remember Shabbos. So if the whole word of Erev Tavshilin is reminder, so you know what? We could set up the reminder on Yontif itself. Meaning, right, on Yontif itself, look, we're living it up. We're having a great time on Yontif. Oh, but you know what? Take this food and put it aside for Shabbos. Why can't, according to Rava, why can't I make the Erev Tavshilin, set up the Erev Tavshilin on Yontif itself? So the Gemara says, you know what? And Nachinami, Alexer, Shami Yipasha. So the Gemara says, you know what? Maybe according to Rava, in Hachinami, maybe you are allowed to set up the Erev Tavshilin on Yantiv itself. But if you wait until Yantiv itself, so you'll be a Poshea, you'll forget about it. Again, once you get involved in Yantiv, so at that point in time, you're probably going to forget. V'tana Maisi Le Mahacha. Okay, so what do we have right now? The Gemara's question, Menahan Emili, how do I know that the institution of Erev Tavshilin, as Rashi points it out, even though the Gemara asked the question, it's really an asmachta, but what's the Erev Tavshilin trying to accomplish? So right now we have two svaras on the table. One svara is that basically it's there to serve you as a way of remembering Shabbos. When Shabbos is most apt to be forgotten, most vulnerable, so remember Shabbos. And you do so by Erev Tavshilin. The other possibility of Erev Tavshilin is there. It's there to remind you that although we're cooking from Yantav to Shabbos, but I can't cook from Yantav to a weekday. Erev Tavshilin is there serving as a reminder. The Braisov now is going to actually get the Erev Tavshilin Asmachta from a different source. So Eis Asher Tofu Afu Veis Asher Tefa Shelu Bashelu. So the Torah says that, look, when you get your man on Erev Shabbos, so you bake it, you cook it. Mikan Amar Rebbe Lazar Ein Ofen Ella Al Ha'afui Ve'ein Mevashlin Ella Al Ha'mevushal. So that if you're going to bake, you already have to have baked goods. And if you're going to cook, you already have to have cooked goods. Mikan Samchu Chachamim Le'erev Tavshilin Min HaTorah. And so here we have an Asmachta for Erev Tavshilin. Meaning, how can I cook from Yantav to Shabbos? By already having cooked foods. How can I bake from Yantav to Shabbos? By already having baked foods. Okay, again, it's an Asmachta. Tan Rabban HaMaitse B'Rebbe Lazar. Rabbi Lazar was darshaning, and the drasha was going on Yantif. Okay, they finished with shul, and Rabbi Lazar says, good, shir. Okay, so everyone's assembled for shir, and shir is going on. And it's going on for some time. So the first group of people leave the base mejish. Yatzakas Rishona Amar Halalu Bale Patasin. So Rabbi Lazar criticizes them. Before they leave, after they leave, seemingly after they left. And he says, Elu Bale Patasim. Rashi describes that those are really large jugs of wine. In other words, they're not going to be just drinking this Yantav, but they're going to be drinking a lot. Now, Kachni Amar Halalu Bale Chavias, Kachlishi Amar Halalu Bale Kadin, Kachrevias, Amar Halalu Bale Ligigin, Kachamishi Amar Halalu Bale Kosos. Now, with every subsequent group that leaves, so he compromises them, I'm sorry, he criticizes them, and he says that, They must be enjoying Yantav. And every time he says they're going to the wine, so he describes a slightly smaller kli. And it makes sense, by the way, because again, the later you leave Shir, the less time you have to drink. So it must be that they have smaller containers of wine in their homes. His chilukat shishi latzeis. Now the sixth group is ready to leave at this point in time. Okay. Now, mind you, by the way, that after the first group, every group knew exactly what's going to happen when they in fact leave, and that is that they're going to get rebuked and they're going to hear it from the Rebbe. Amar halalu bale meira. Okay, so when the sixth group left, so at that point in time, Rabbi Elazar was really upset, and he cursed them. Now nasanena b'tamidam hischilu panei mishtanin. So he looks at the students and their complexion totally changes. Amar lahem b'ni, lo lachem ani omer ela lahalalu shiyatsu, sheminichem chayolam v'oskim b'chayei sha'am. So he says, look, everyone who stays, I'm fine. The people are leaving. So what they're doing is that they're enjoying this world, but at the expense of olam haba. Now, b'shas p'tira san, obviously, there are a couple of loose ends that we're going to try to tie up, but meanwhile, let's finish. B'shas p'tira san, amar lahem l'chu ichlu mishman, mishmanim v'shasu mamtakim v'shachu manos le'ein nachon lo ki kadosh hayom la'adoneinu v'al teyetzu ki chedvas Hashem hi ma'uzchem. And so he quotes the pasuk from Nehemiah, the pasuk in Nehemiah. So we've quoted from this pasuk already earlier in this Masechta, right in the 8th parak. So they assemble everybody and they basically reintroduce everybody to things like Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur and Sukkos. Okay, and it seems a simple reading of the Psukim in Nehemiah, it seems like these are things that they weren't that familiar with. Okay, Galus does that, and so after introducing them to Rosh Hashanah, so he says, okay, go home and eat, and so basically what Rabbi Lazar does now is that he quotes the Psukim from Nehemiah, saying to the Talmidim, good, now Shir is done, now go ahead and eat b'simcha. Okay. Now, Amar Mar. Gemara says, can we ask some follow-up questions over here? So Amar Mar, Shemnichim Chayolam Voskim B'chayisha V'asim Chaz Yontov Mitzvahi. So Rabbi Lozer is so critical about those who are leaving, and Rabbi Lozer says, look, they're enjoying this world with no mitzvah. With no mitzvah. It's Yontif. So when you're eating on Yontif, it's Simcha. In fact, the first parak of our Masechta, which we just spent 2 weeks doing, so that was all about Simcha. What can I do because of Simcha's Yontif? And what halachas can I do and what will bend and give because of Simcha's Yontif? That's been the whole first parak. So the Gemara is asking now a really simple and straightforward question. Well, how is Rabbi Lozer criticizing them about going home and eating a suit on Yontif? So Rabbi Lozer latame, so the Gemara says, yeah, but this is Rabbi Lozer consistent with his position. Damar Simchas Yontif Rishus. De Tanyam. As far as Rabbi Lozer is concerned, so do you have to eat on Yontif? No, it's optional. We learned in a brisa, Rabbi Lozer Amar Ein Lo La'adam B'yamtav Ela Ocha V'shoseh O Yoshev V'shoneh. So on Yontif, here are your options. You could be either eating and drinking all of Yontif, or you could be learning all of Yontif. Either option is fine. So Rabbi Yeshua Amar Chalkei Ochetzi L'Hashem V'chetzi L'Hashem. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, I got a better idea. And that is, let's take the day and divide in half. Half is L'Hashem and half is L'Hashem. Amar Rabbi Yochanan V'shnei Mikra Chadarshu. The two of them are learning it from the same pasuk, Chasav Echad Omer, Atzeres L'Hashem Elokecha. So on one hand, one pasuk indicates that this is a day totally dedicated to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Because of Echad Omer, Atzeres T'Yelachem. And the other pasuk says, no, it's Atzeres T'Yelachem. It's yours. In other words, the day is all yours. So is it all Hashem? Is it all Lachem? So Aketza, Rabbi Lazar, Savar, Okula Hashem, Okula Lachem. So Rabbi Lazar says, okay, you're just simply going to have to choose. Either you are, right, Yesh V'Yesh, meaning for Rabbi Elazar, the Torah is basically saying, look, there are various personalities, the enjoyment of Yontif can speak to different people and speak in different ways. So people will really enjoy Simchas Yontif by eating. Some people will really enjoy Simchas Yontif by learning. So Yesh V'Yesh, and the Torah says either pathway is fine, but you got to pick a path. It's one or the other for Rabbi Eliezer. And Rabbi Yeshua says, V'chalkei, chetzi l'Hashem v'chetzi l'Hashem. And Rabbi Yeshua says, no, the Torah is not giving you two different pathways. The Torah is actually giving you one pathway. It just happens to be that these two psukim are reflecting two halves of the same picture. But the picture is going to be that Yontif is a day that's both Lashem and Lachem. And obviously it comes in, I say obviously, it's not true, it's not obvious, because Rabbi Elazar disagrees. But Rabbi Yoshua says that the full picture comes in a balance of half of it being Lachem and half of it being Lashem. Okay. So so when Rabbi Elazar was giving rebuke to the Talmidim, so now we understand within the context of Rabbi Eliezer. So the rebuke is coming over the fact that, look, they stayed for Shir. Once they stayed for Shir, so as far as I'm concerned, so that's it. You chose a pathway. You got to stick with that pathway. Now in the middle of Shir, you're going to go home and eat? Wait, you can't do that. In other words, again, Rabbi Eliezer Lishita So. Okay. Maile Eina Chonlo. We did quote the pasuk from Sefer Nechemiah. So the Gemara says, can we just go back and just explain the pasuk a little bit better? Meaning Nechemiah the Navi says to the Jewish people, okay, go ahead and eat. And do so b'simcha, and then the pasuk ends la'inachon lo. So Amrav Chisal Lamisha lo iniach eruv v'tavshilin. Oh, so and who can eat? Even someone who didn't step up eruv tavshilin. Ika darmer Lamisha lo hayalo laniach eruv tavshilin. Avamisha hayalo laniach eruv tavshilin v'lo iniach poshehu. So in a slightly different version, so we're describing somebody who didn't have the opportunity. Set Be'er of Tavshilin. Rachmanis, he didn't even have enough to set Be'er of Tavshilin. But for somebody who had the ability to set Be'er of Tavshilin, he didn't do so, so he's going to be considered a Poshea. Okay, later in this parak, we're going to talk in more detail in terms of what to do if you, in fact, forgot to set up Be'er of Tavshilin. Maiki Chedvas Hashem Hima Uschem. Again, going back to the Pasuk in Nechemiah, the Gemara says a little more clarity. I'm Rav Yochanan, Mishim Rav Blazer, Rav Shimon. I'm Alam HaKosh Baruch Hu, Yisrael, B'ni Lavu Alai, V'kishu Kedusha Sayam, V'minu Bi, Vani Porea. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that I am your oz, I'm your strength, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu is saying to the Jewish people, look, right, the people that came back with Ezra and Nehemiah for Bais Sheni, so unfortunately, not wealthy, poor people. Are you going to have to borrow for Yontif? Okay, borrow for Yontif. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says that, look, you borrow and you rely on the fact that I'm going to be poor, I'm going to pay you back. Okay. Amar of Yochanan Mishum Rabbi Lazar Rabbi Shimon. Harotza she's kaimu nechasav. So what happens now where you've gained wealth and you now want to protect your wealth? So what do? So you put together a trust. But not exactly the modern version of a trust. So the Gemara says Yita behem eder. So what you're going to do is you're going to plant the very popular eder plant. Okay, everyone heard of it? Okay, I'm going to make an admission over here. I never heard of it. Okay, but it doesn't matter. Rashi writes over here, Yitem Bam Eder, Ilan Chashuvhu, V'yeshlo Shem Lemerachok. So Rashi says that everyone knows. In other words, if you have Eder trees in your field, everybody knows about it. V'omrim Ploni Yeshlo Eder Besadehu, Omitoch Kachay Nikra Sashmo. Good. And now your field is going to have a reputation. V'im Holech, I'm reading Rashi. V'im Holech L'medina Sayamo V'acher V'yechzik Ba, Yeshlo Edem Harbe Shaisa Shalal. And because the tree is so chashuv and everyone now is going to associate that field with yours, if while you're away, anyone wants to try to assume the rights and the ownership of that property, and someone's going to squat on that property. So now, because the field is so attached to you, so everyone's going to come in and protest. V'ilu machra hayaha kol yotzei lios nikras hashmo shosheni. And the sale of that field is also going to be really popular. Okay? La havdil, right? Whenever big buildings are sold, whenever, you know, big developments are sold, so, you know, you'll see news about it. Oh, right? This was sold to so-and-so. Okay. In other words, it's widely known because it's such a big deal. When you plant eder in your property, that makes your field a really big deal. And so therefore, it's going to help protect your property. It's the old fashioned trust, if you will. So yita behem eder, shenem adiba maram Hashem. Okay. Now, obviously, the pasuk over here has nothing to do with the halacha, but again, it's a smachta. So inami adra kishme kedami inshri my adra dekaima ledari dare. In fact, it's kind of built into the name. So the tree eder comes from the word door, because this creates generational wealth. Okay. Taina meachi sade sheish bo eder ein an exels vein an nechmeses uperusel mishtamim. You plant an eder tree in your field. It's not going to be stolen. No one's going to be chomes. No one's going to just grab the field away from you. All the fruit are going to be guarded. In other words, again, that eder tree really creates a both literal and figurative protective fence around your field, and it's going to be there to help protect you. Okay, let's recap. Let's review. Okay, we start off the end of the first parak today. What can you send to other people on Yom Tov? So in the last mission that we did of the first parak, so we talked about clothing, sending clothing to other people, and with many details over there in that mishnah about sending clothing that's stitched, not stitched, even kalaim clothing you can send. The gemara. I really had a difficult time understanding that, but the Gemara ended up saying a pshan the Mishnah. Shoes, you can't send sandal mesumar, but other shoes you can send. And in the course of discussing all the details within the Mishnah, we also spent some time today talking about tefillin. You can even send tefillin on yantiv. Now, you're not allowed to wear tefillin on yantiv, but you're allowed to send tefillin on yantiv. How does that fit in with the Mishnah? So the Gemara tried to give a pshat in the Mishnah in terms of how to read that into the Mishnah. We saw this morning an exciting Rashi. Rashi says that you're allowed to send tefillin on yantiv because there's no iser to put tefillin on yantiv, meaning you can you're not to put tefillin on yantiv. Yantiv is lavzman tefillin, but there's no iser in doing so. So says Rashi in today's daf. An exciting Rashi. Okay. And what happens if you find tefillin? Where do you take the tefillin in order to ensure the security of the tefillin? So we had a brisa, we had a statement of Abaye. We were trying at the end of the first parak to be miyashe of the brisas and the statement of Abaye in terms of where do you go with your tefillin. And then we started the second parak of the Masechta today, an Erev Tavshilin. So this morning we gave a brief introduction to Erev Tavshilin based on the Gemara Pesachim. That Erev Tavshilin is a rabbinic institution, and how is that allowing me to cook from Yantuf to Shabbos if in fact you're cooking from Yantuf to Shabbos and Isra Daraisa? So the Gemara Pesachim says either it's Hawel or it's going to be that Yom Tov and Shabbos are really Kedushachas. Okay. That's the Gemara Pesachim. What is the purpose of Erev Tavshilin? What is it looking to accomplish? So the Gemara says there are two svaras in terms of the purpose. One svara is that make sure to remember Shabbos even in a situation where you are apt to forget it, i.e. Friday is Yom Tov, so you have a chance of forgetting about Shabbos. Erev Tavshilin ensures you're not going to forget about Shabbos. The other possibility, says the Gemara, is that Erev Tavshilin is there to remind you that although you are now cooking from Yom Tov to Shabbos, but you're not allowed to cook from Yom Tov to a weekday. And Erev Tavshilin is there to remind you. How is it reminding you? because it's telling you, hey, you can't cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos until you set up Erev Tav Shilin. Ah, okay, fine. So now, if Erev Tav Shilin is the only thing allowing me to cook from Yom Tov to Shabbos, it must mean that I certainly can't cook from Yom Tov to a weekday. And finally, last thing we discussed, and the Mishnah also went through the details of what exactly is going to be the makeup of your Erev Tav Shilin. One cooked food, two cooked foods, good. And then the Gemara's discussion, Menahani Mili, what's the Asmakta, based on which Pesukim did the Chachamim attach the din of Erev Tav Shilin? The Gemara gives a couple of suggestions. And then we end off today with Rabbi Eliezer giving shir, people leaving the shir. Rav Elazar being very critical of the people living shir, and we went over a basic machlokas today in terms of whether or not Yom Tov is a day which is kula Hashem, kula lachem, or a blend. Machlokas between Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer. Okay, Adkan.